Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I don't think it would make much difference either way. But he should resign if it can be shown that she was responsible for ordering US diplomatic figures to engage in espionage activities at the United Nations.
But where's the music? All right, welcome to the Savage Nation. I have been exonerated. Forget the comedian. Forget the ex-president who was a con man because he brought about the meltdown of our economy. I don't care how many Republican stooges out there buy his book. George Bush did this to us, not Obama. George Bush melted down the economy. It was George Bush, Christopher Cox. It was the then Treasury Secretary. It's all pointed out in trickle-up poverty. I'm sick of this deification of George Bush by Wallbanger and the other fraudulent water carriers for the Bush administration. I'm going to tell you right now that when I saw this story this morning on CNBC, I almost fell out of the chair, and I've seen virtually everything by now. We just had released today, the Federal Reserve was forced to release details of who they lent the $3.3 trillion to during the crisis that was created by George Bush, George Soros, and the others who melted us down in order to give us Obama. You're not going to believe who got the money. Well, we know that American banks got the money. Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, and Wells Fargo. One could argue that there is a rationale for bailing out American banks, although I wouldn't argue that necessarily, in that the people weren't bailed out. It was the bankers who were bailed out. Take a look at the bonuses they've given themselves since the bailout. But let's put that aside. The blockbuster is that foreign banks also took your money and ran. Barclays Bank, Royal Bank of Scotland, and Deutsche Bank were among the big borrowers. But what's even more disturbing is that Barclays Bank borrowed a cumulative $232 billion from the funds. And what did they do with it? They bought an American company. They bought all the U.S. operations of Lehman Brothers. And Lehman Brothers was forced into bankruptcy by the other gangsters of Wall Street. And a foreign bank borrows money from our government and picks up the pieces from Lehman Brothers. It's beyond comprehension. Bank of Scotland. Of the UK, Societe Generale of France, Dresdner Bank, Bayerische Landesbank of Germany, Dexia of Belgium, were all among the top 10 users of American money under George Bush. How do you feel about that? Do you think it was appropriate for George Bush and Christopher Cox and then Treasury Secretary Paulson to lend money to foreign banks during the fake crisis that was created in order to give us a panic attack and make us vote for an unknown man from Chicago who has now proven himself to be the most incompetent, dangerous president in American history? I want to read you something. First of all, I want to repeat what I just said to you on the Savage Nation. As the euro crisis is spreading to Spain and Portugal and Italy, and the euro itself is collapsing, hitting a 10-week low, the United States is now going to bail out the euro. But we just learned that the United States under George Bush bailed out these foreign banks. So there's virtually no difference in fiscal policy between what George Bush started and what Obama is continuing. It's the same exact governmental policy, but you don't understand this. It's a shell game. But I, Michael Savage, have pointed out that the Democrats or Republicans are an oligarchy. I've said this since 1994 on the radio, and well before 1994, before I was on the radio. Now, let's boil it down to what you, the person in the street, should take away from this. You think that the money doesn't really hurt anybody. You think that the money that disappeared under Bush and Christopher Cox disappeared. You don't understand that the value of America's assets were driven down by more than $10 trillion in 2008 under George Bush. You don't understand there was an agenda lurking behind the shadowy dealings, all pointed out in trickle-up poverty. But I ask you this, where did those dollars go? I'll read this to you from page 80 of trickle-up poverty. They ended up in the hands of a relatively small number of people and companies whose purpose was far more nefarious than merely making profits. The raiders who trashed our markets sought nothing less than to use the control they had gained over our financial system to put a wet behind the ears leftist president in office. Moreover, they leveraged that power to create a government run on socialist principles, but controlled by a small group of wealthy investors who dictate policy to the puppet president they elected. In effect, they pushed us further along the path to a socialist oligarchy, reference number one in Trickle Up Poverty Nightmare on Wall Street. Another player in the financial meltdown is leftist financier George Soros, who some believe has been trying for decades to manipulate American politics to the advantage of the Marxists with whom he is in league. It seems to me that Soros tried to rig the 2004 election in favor of John Kerry. How? By pouring tens of millions of dollars into Kerry's campaign coffers and into building an anti-capitalist, anti-democratic organization such as MoveOn.org. In spite of that massive investment, was Soros successful? No. Did he give up? Far from it. During the next few years, you'll have to read the rest yourself on pages 80, 81 of The Savage Nation. What is the take-home message of what I read to you? Here is the take-home message. You're an average person. You're worried about your family. You're worried about your bills. If you're like me, you have your savings in T-bills because there's no interest anywhere, so you're basically putting it under the mattress, and you assume that guy Ben Bernanke is going to protect you. You assume that the Treasury Secretary, that idiot Geithner, who goes to a stupid comedian from Brooklyn for advice on how to run the economy, you think that that schmuck is going to protect your money? You think that spitting idiot in the Treasury Department knows what the hell he's doing? He doesn't know anything. He may as well be an OPA fish. He may as well be an OPA fish in the Treasury Department. So we learned today, the Federal Reserve is finally forced to reveal who they gave the money to during the crisis that was created by these secret hands. $3.3 trillion is a lot of money. So I gave you the banks that got the money. One could argue, well, it prevented a meltdown of epic proportions. But why should we bail out Barclays Bank of London, Royal Bank of Scotland, and Deutsche Bank among the other borrowers? Why is that? Now, you would argue because it's an international banking community, and if they collapsed, why then there would be a domino effect and the whole world would collapse. I would argue to the contrary. I would say that if the European and other American banks that were over-leveraged or invested in spurious securities or false fiduciary instruments that they created in order to profit from them went out of business, it's too damn bad. Then we'd have fewer banks, but healthier banks. And these practices that were used to get us in the hot water in the first place would be over. So why did we bail out the European banks? It had nothing to do with saving the international monetary system. It had all to do with their cousins in America bailing out their cousins and fraternity brothers in Europe. You don't understand something. The banking community is a very small, tight-knit community. What goes on in Germany or England or New York or San Francisco banks is done by a few hands. 6 to 15 people control the world's economy. They're bailing each other out with your money, and we're the idiots, we're the patsies. Now, I understand that you can't do anything about it. I understand we no longer live in a representative democracy where if we did live in one, heads would roll today. Geithner would be thrown out of office. There'd be an immediate congressional investigation of then-Secretary Paulson. Christopher Cox would be pulled out of his hole somewhere where he's hiding and be forced to go before Congress. Look what they pick on. They pick on Charlie Rangel. Now, admittedly, Rangel did things that were wrong, probably illegal. But why was it that this African-American congressman from Harlem was humiliated and dragged over the hot coals of Congress while Hank Paulson and Christopher Cox were not even heard from in recent months? Why is that? The same crap that's been going on in this country for a half a century or more is still going on. It's like arresting a kid who robs a necklace from a street vendor as opposed to the guy selling heroin to the entire city. And that's what's gone on, and that's what's supposed to stop, and that's what's not stopping. And that's my monologue for the day. It's one from the heart. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. When I come back on the Savage Nation, which will be momentarily, I will now take the heat off this pot that I started boiling, because I realize most of you can't follow it or don't want to follow it or getting sick listening to it because you fear that the money you have in T-bills is liable to disappear. You're afraid the money you put in the bank is liable to not be there in 3 months. You're afraid you could wake up like your grandfather did and one of the major American banks could be absolutely out of money, that there could be lines around the street and there wouldn't be a dime in the bank. You think I'm different than you? I have worked for over six decades. I have some money put away. You think I don't worry every night? Will there be money tomorrow? Oh, I have some money in gold put away in banks. But most of my money's that I've saved is in T-bills. What is a T-bill? It's nothing. It's another fiduciary instrument created by the same gang. And what's the fundamental basis of a T-bill? It isn't gold. There are solutions to this problem. But instead of talking about the economy all day and the FDA was forced, the Fed was forced to disclose who they gave the $3.3 trillion in crisis loans to, you now understand what Rahm Emanuel meant when he said we never let a good crisis go unheeded. We now understand what they meant by that. And why then are these people permitted in the banking world to take these pornographic bonuses? Why? Why are they permitted to do it? Because they run the economy. They can do what the hell they want. Going back 300-400 years, they've been able to do what they want. There's no difference in what went on 300 years ago in terms of bankers and what's going on now. Virtually no difference. We are still basically peasants living in an era when the secret hands ran everything. This country was an experiment that was supposed to be different. Guess what? The experiment's over. I'll be right back. Savage. You know, yesterday I talked about how to make a stuffed pepper, and I can float like a butterfly or sting like a bee, as Muhammad Ali once said. And eventually today, when I get around to it, I will talk about how I cooked opah fish last night with capers and olives. But I don't want to do a recipe right now, because what I gave you at the opening of this show was perhaps the most brilliant analysis of the banking crisis orchestrated by George Bush and his henchmen, or shall I say by those who controlled George Bush and his henchmen, and who now gave us Obama and his henchmen. And that is this cabal of bankers. Now, I want to explain to you what the word cabal means. In short, when you hear the word, it was a cabal, that is a secret group of plotters or political conspirators. I mean, we all kind of know that when we hear the word cabal. We know it's a secret group that's plotting something. The cabal this, the cabal that. And it comes from the Hebrew word. That is related to this in some way. It's originally related to the Hebrew word, which means a secret, a secret. And we now know what it means, basically a secret society. But there's no secret anymore that when you talk about a banking cabal, it's a very small group of people and they're bailing each other out. And as I tried to tell you in that brilliant discourse, as I describe it again, till you hear me, the most brilliant political book of the age, Trickle Up Poverty, particularly the banking book, Nightmare on Wall Street, how they created the crisis to bring in Obama and blame him for what's going on. You have to understand that if you're a member of the middle class, you're one of the 100 million plus people who was basically attacked by this cabal. You're also one of the people who have made America the great nation that it is. You're raising your family, you're working at your job or running the business you created, you're contributing to investment and retirement accounts, you're attending church or temple, and now you're asking yourself what you've done to deserve Obama's attack on your wealth and freedoms. The answer is unsettling. To leftists like Obama, you are not simply middle class, you are part of the bourgeoisie. That's the group most despised by Marxists like Obama and by so many members of his inner circle and czars. The savage truth is that you're part of the group Obama has singled out to feel the pain of trickle-up poverty. I then want to talk to you at some point about the puppet masters, which I've done to a certain extent. I want to take some calls now in this segment. Kelly in Maryland, thank you for listening, and thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I can explain why the banks had to be bailed out on the short term, whether they were domestic or international, doesn't really matter. They were all parties to short-term counterparty deals, which number into the trillions. And if one of them lost confidence, then the other one would lose confidence, and it really would have been a domino effect. I worked in.
All right, I understand that. I just explained that that's the rationale, is that it's an international system, and that if one fell, the theory is that a domino effect would have occurred. But let me ask you this. Why, then, did they bail the bankers out rather than the banks? You know the bankers profited as well, didn't they?
That's a little more complicated, and I think it requires more investigation, but the original short-term bailout...
But wait a minute, hold on. Why is it more complicated? That's the kind of answer professors usually give when they don't know the answer to a question. Nothing is that complicated. I found my professors who knew the most had the answers. Those who didn't know the answers or were obfuscating something always said, that's too complicated, let's go back to the main point. I could see bailing out banks, but why did we bail out the bankers of Europe? And why did they take these enormous pornographic-level bonuses this year? Do you think they deserved it?
They might have had contracts, whether they deserve it or not.
Had contracts. Maybe they had contracts not to run their banks off the rails, but they violated the contract. So I don't go for that. I think this is all an internal game of one banker helping another banker. There's one other point, sir, and I'm sure you know much more about banking than I do, but are you aware of the fact that some of those in Europe who borrowed this paper then used it to buy assets of broken-up American banks like Lehman Brothers?
Yeah, again, the longer-term bailout, I think, is questionable. The short-term bailout had to happen. What they did with the assets after that, I think, deserves examination.
Well, Barclays bought the U.S. operations of Lehman Brothers, which was taken apart by George Bush's henchmen, mainly Paulson and Christopher Cox, who let it happen. Cox was the cop that was out basically drunk in a local bar. Christopher Cox may as well have been a drunk cop in a bar on 43rd Street for what went on. His job was to stop this. He was negligent. I have never seen an investigation of Christopher Cox, Kelly. And can you explain that to me?
Savage.
So the crisis that was created by George Bush's reckless fiscal policies, and we inherited, of course, was used to put in this inexperienced president that we now have. And now we wake up to find out that they're going to add insult to injury. Today we learn, this is all news, by the way, that the U.S., under this idiot Ben Bernanke, has just said that we're willing to bail out European banks again by giving money to the European Stability Fund, the European Financial Stability Facility. In other words, we're going to send more money to them. There are a lot of people talking about that. I think the European Commission has talked about, said the U.S. official to CNBC, commenting on enlarging the $980 billion EU IMF European Stability Fund. He says, it is up to the Europeans. We will certainly support using the IMF in these circumstances. What you don't know is that the United States is the largest contributor to the IMF. The IMF, whose biggest single shareholder is the United States, has committed 250 billion euros to the EFSF. And it is not, listen to this, while reluctant to dictate to Europe how it should address the crisis, they're willing to give them money. What happened today after that announcement is that U.S. Treasury's prices fell, and the euro strengthened against the dollar today after the news that the U.S. would be prepared to support an enlarged EFSF. Germany does not want to make the Stability Fund larger. Germany has a much more constrained fiscal policy. But the idiots who are running our economy do not understand the first thing about fiscal responsibility. These are fiscal anarchists. George Bush was a fiscal socialist, as I said, for 2 years leading up to this election. I was the only one trying to awaken you. I have been the Paul Revere of radio from the day I started. I am the Paul Revere of radio right now. How these morons could be talking about George Bush, the reinvented George Bush, I'll never understand this. I don't understand how men who consider themselves to be so intelligent can be such schmucks and such shills. John in Binghamton, New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi. How can the golfer and the wall banger look at themselves in the mirror? They're both assisting the cover-up because they both had hour-long on-air interviews with George Bush, and he was given like a glowing interview for a full hour on both of their shows.
Don't you look? Not don't you understand? I don't mean to denigrate you in any way. Don't you remember Rush Limbaugh, the great blowhard himself, Rush Limbaugh, when he was finally caught a few years ago for being a water boy for the Republicans, was forced to admit on his own show, in his own words, when he said, "I've been a water carrier for the Republicans, but I will no longer be so." Do you recall that particular confession of his?
I never heard that confession, but if someone would dig up the soundbite, I would.
Yeah, well, we'll try to find it. So he said that, and then of course the Bush bots and the Rush bots rushed back behind him and said, "You see, he's an independent." But now all of a sudden he's putting that behind himself, and he is doing it all over again. He has always been, in my opinion, a frontman for the mainstream check pants Republican establishment, which is how this talentless hack got where he is. And of course, when you talk about the wall banger, he's just mini me. He's the mini me Rush Limbaugh. He'd be nothing if he didn't have Rush's lead in. He's a nobody. The guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Do you know that he's only a high school, if that, graduate? Do you understand these guys? And I have to say it again. Many of you may take offense at this. But there's a certain point at which education does matter. There's a certain point at which being well-read does matter. There's a certain point at which being a scholar who has read thousands of scientific articles and has the ability to analyze data does matter. And just playing golf or hitting a drywall does not qualify you for being a talk show host. And I'm sick and tired of them getting away with it. But I think that this exposure may eventually bring us back to fiscal reality. George Bush did this to us. And there is absolutely no excuse for Wallbanger and Golfer to be their Bush's public relations agent. None whatsoever. That's one man's opinion, John. Thanks for the call. What else can I say? I mean, would you like me to back off now and start telling you how I cooked dinner last night? I don't know if I'm ready. I'm a little sick right now. I'll tell you why. I don't mean physically. There's a book that came out called Bloodlands, Europe Between Hitler and Stalin by Timothy Snyder. Probably the most definitive book ever written on the atrocities of Hitler and Stalin and how Stalin and Hitler enabled each other's crimes. It's one of the most shocking books I have ever read in my life. And I finally got it over the weekend. I was afraid to read it because of its graphic nature. Written by a genius, Timothy Snyder, professor of history at Yale. This is a really amazing book. I know what it is to write a real book. And when you start to read what the Nazis did to the Jews, it's enough to make... I mean, I thought I had seen it all, I heard it all, I didn't. There's things in here I never thought could have been done from one human being to another. And one of the reasons I'm bringing it up now, and must bring it up now, is because when we start talking about bankers, when we start talking about cabals, when we start talking about banks and conspiracies, there are many people in the world who are going to start to blame the Jews, as though only Jews are bankers and only Jews are involved in plotting and planning. And this is a most dangerous situation for the world again. You've got to understand that the Holocaust didn't happen overnight. The Holocaust started with whispering campaigns, with lies, with propaganda, and it eventually led to the shaving of the hair of naked Jewish women who were then gassed to death in front of their children. So you got to be very careful where you go with allegations against people of a certain race. And I don't know whether it's worth reading this to you or not. I don't know if I have the guts to read it, frankly, because it'll get me sicker again. And this is a subject I don't even want to get into, the Nazi death factories. The thing for most of you leftists to understand is that although Hitler was the monster he has been put up to be, Stalin was equally as bad as Hitler. And that's something many of you hardcore communists don't want to accept. And you've got to understand that America's wartime ally, Joseph Stalin, had already shot and starved millions of his own citizens in Russia before the war even began, before World War II began. And Stalin, the good communist, continued to kill by the millions throughout the war. And although American soldiers liberated concentration camps, they never reached the death factories, killing fields, and starvation sites where Hitler and Stalin murdered civilians on a massive scale. We know that the Nazi regime killed people, But did you know that together the Nazi and Soviet regimes killed 14 million people in a zone of death between Berlin and Moscow? 14 million people. Can you imagine what number that is? I live in San Francisco, 500,000 people. That means the entire city of 500,000 people is almost an insignificant decimal in terms of the number of people killed by these madmen. Do you know what we mean by killing? Do you have any idea what that means? Do you know what killing a single person means? I'm sure most of us are shocked when we hear about a murder or a beating or a death. But can you virtually imagine killing thousands or millions of people? Can you imagine a society given over to killing a person of a certain race and wiping out the entire race? Well, it happened. But it was happening not just because of Hitler, but also because of Stalin. Equally crazy men. Shall I read some of it for you? Would you like to hear some of this? I'll read you a paragraph just to give you something to think about and make you realize how good you have it in this country and how our worst scoundrel in this country is an angel compared to what can happen on this earth. I'll read you from page 268 of Bloodlands, the Nazi death factories. So there were some Jews who escaped from trains, and because of it, the man who was in charge of transporting them to the death camps was removed from his post for incompetence. And in August 1942, Stengel took command of Treblinka. Stengel later said that he regarded the mass gassing of Jews as his profession and that he enjoyed it, quickly put Treblinka in order. Stengel commanded with the help of a particularly vicious assistant, Kurt Franz, whom the Jewish laborers called the doll, for his vanity and good looks. Franz liked to watch Jews box. He liked to watch his dog attack Jews, and he liked to watch animals in general. At one point, he had the Jewish laborers construct a zoo. The Germans were assisted by a few dozen Trawinki men who served as guards and performed a few essential functions within the facility, such as herding Jews into the gas chambers and releasing the carbon monoxide gas. The rest of the labor was performed by a few hundred Jews, spared from death only in order to carry out tasks associated with mass killing and plunder, and then would doom themselves to a quick death if they showed any sign of weakness. As rumors of Treblinka spread, the Germans engaged in propaganda. The Polish government, in exile in London, had been passing on to its British and American allies reports of the gassings along with other German killings of Polish citizens. Throughout the summer, it urged the British and the Americans to take retributive actions against German civilians to no effect. Officers of the Polish resistance, the Home Army, considered an attack on Treblinka but did not carry one out. The Germans denied the gassings. The chief of the Jewish police in Warsaw, Josef Sierinski, claimed that he had received postcards from Treblinka. All right, I won't read you any more of this, or more of that. Within a few months, Stengel had changed the appearance of Treblinka, the death camp, and increased its lethal functionality. Jews who arrived at Treblinka, by the way, if you're a person who, let us say, lost a relative in the camp, and I don't know how many are left who did that, or you yourself are a person who did, or you're weak in mind, or you're not feeling well, I'd rather you turn this radio off for about a minute or two, because I don't think you want to hear this. Sometimes reality is too much for the strongest mind. Jews who arrived at Treblinka in late 42 disembarked not to a simple ramp surrounded by dead bodies, but inside a mock train station painted by a Jewish laborer to resemble a real one. It had a clock, a timetable, and ticket counters. As Jews stepped from the station, they could hear the sound of music played by an orchestra led by the Warsaw musician Arthur Gold. Those Jews who limped or hobbled or otherwise revealed themselves to be weak at this point were taken to a, quote, clinic. Jewish workers with red armbands helped them to a building marked with a red cross. Behind this building, the sick Jews were shot in the back of the neck over a ditch by Germans dressed as doctors. The chief executioner was August Mitte, whom the Jewish laborers called the Angel of Death, Malach HaMavet. Those Jews who could move themselves took a few steps forward into a kind of courtyard where the men and women were separated, men to the right, women to the left, as they were told in German and Yiddish. In the courtyard, the Jews were forced to strip naked, on the pretext that they were to be disinfected before a further transport to the east. Jews had to bundle their clothes neatly and tie their shoes together by the laces. They had to surrender any valuables. Women were subjected to cavity searches. At this point, a few women in some of the transports were selected for rape, and a few men in some of the transports were selected for labor. The women then shared the fate of the rest. whereas the men would live for a few more days, weeks, or months as slave laborers. As the women went to the gas chambers without their clothes and without their hair, each woman had to sit before a Jewish, quote, barber. Religiously observant women who wore wigs had to surrender them. Even at this very last moment before death, people reacted differently individually. For some women, the hair cutting was confirmation of this infection story. For others, it was the proof that they were about to be killed. The women's hair was used to be made stockings for German railway workers and to line the slippers worn by German submarine crews. Both groups, first the women and then the men, naked, humiliated, and helpless, were forced to run through a tunnel. It was a few meters wide and about 100 meters long. The Germans called it the Road to Heaven. At its end, Jews might see a large Star of David in the gable over the entrance to a dark room. A ceremonial curtain hung with a Hebrew inscription, "This is the gateway to God. The righteous shall pass through." Probably few enough of them noticed these details as they were forced roughly inside by the two guards posted at the entrance. One of the men held a piece of pipe, the other a sword, and both yelled and beat the Jews. Then one of them closed and locked the door and called for water, the very last element of the deception, no longer necessary for this doomed group, now sealed in a gas chamber, but for whoever else might be waiting. A third man threw a lever, and a tank engine pumped carbon monoxide into the chamber. I'll pause right here because there's no point in reading anymore. This is from this book, Bloodlands, and there is equally chilling anti-humanity seen in the communist Joseph Stalin. And what puzzles me to this day about this chapter of human history is not only how it could happen, but if it could happen again. And when I see the religion of Islam, and I see so many people in the religion of Islam repeating the same blood libel against Jews and against Christians, and I see a stunned denial by the most powerful people in the Western world, I say, can it happen again? And I say, it is happening again. And the reason I say it is happening again, because I told you before this little diversion from the banking story, that the Holocaust did not happen outright. It started with a blood libel against the Jews. It started with a hate campaign against the Jews. It started with stories against the Jews. Just as the Muslim fanatics are now spreading and disseminating lies in the UN itself and around the world, with hardly a peep from anyone in the Western world. I say to you, ladies and gentlemen, it is happening again. And now I'll take a rest.
Savage.
Let me explain something about myself and why my show has a certain appeal to you if you're a regular listener. I was talking about the banking crisis, the bailout of Europe. I warned you that when you start talking bankers, people immediately start, some of them, gossiping, the Jews did it and the Jews did this. Be very, very careful where you go with that. 70 years ago, it led to the deaths of millions from the same kind of drivel. And now we have another confounding variable mixed into the match of anti-Semitism, which is the disease of radical Islam. And now mixed in with that component is the pacifism of the West and the fact that we have no leadership running from Paris to Washington. We have nothing but functionaries and stooges and puppets. There's virtually not a man amongst them willing to stand up to this scourge that threatens to take us down. So be very careful before you start blaming the Jews for the banking crisis, is why I brought it up. But there's another reason. And perhaps the most important reason that my mind jumped to this book, Bloodlands, Europe Between Hitler and Stalin, by Timothy Snyder, the brilliant historian at Yale. And that is because of Obama. Now, I know you're going to say, what does he have to do with Hitler and Stalin? And I want you to listen to me. I am convinced that Obama himself is a rather nice person, as was Pol Pot of Cambodia. Cambodia, under Pol Pot, Pol Pot was a nice professor who went to Paris, studied Marxism, came back and introduced a transformational group of policies in Cambodia that resulted in the death of 3 million fellow Cambodians. If you remember the movie from the 70s with a mountain of skulls, they unleashed teenagers in red scarves, known as the Red Brigades or the Khmer Rouge in that case, who went about rounding up the entire middle class. Anyone with eyeglasses was slave labored or killed. Any policeman, teacher, doctor, lawyer, architect. In other words, anyone with a pair of glasses, anyone with an education, was considered a counter-revolutionary in Cambodia and killed. Now, we're not saying that Obama wants to kill the middle class in America. Don't be absurd. But when you see a man as intellectually feeble as Barack Obama, who keeps using the word transformative or transformational, you have to understand that both Hitler and Stalin believed in a transformative utopia that they were trying to create. And in this transformative utopia that they were dreaming of, they had to find a group to be blamed when its realization proved impossible. And in their cases, Hitler and Stalin, mass murder was then used and proclaimed as a kind of victory over that particular class. Now, those of you who have the simplistic schoolbook idea that the Hitlerites were the mass murderers and the Soviets, the communists, were the liberators, I have a lot of news for you. You don't know the first thing about history. You know nothing about history. You have to understand that the 3.3 million killed in the Soviet Ukraine were killed not by Hitler but by Stalin, and the Ukrainians who died in the famine of 1933 that followed Stalin's destructive collectivization of the farms. The farms. Now, Obama has not collectivized the United States farms for better production, comma, yet, period. But he has taken over General Motors. He has nationalized the healthcare system. Do you think it's beyond this man to nationalize agriculture in the United States of America? I would say that this transformational dupe that we have in the White House is capable of anything.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Crisis to go to waste. And what I mean by that, it's an opportunity to do things that you think you could not do before.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well funded.
So welcome back to the radio show that everyone is still talking about all these years later. Just when everyone thought I was out, I'm back in. I'm back in the game, bigger than ever, more important than ever. Trickle-up poverty became a hit only with this show. A few other good people in the business had me on, but by and large, it's only through this show that you heard about the book and went out and created a bestseller out of it. And the reason I am talking about that today is because it led us to the stories of the day. Euro crisis spreads to Spain, Portugal, Italy. The fact that we learned today, finally, the Federal Reserve was forced to reveal who they gave money to during the Bush-induced crisis. And it turns out that it also included the $3.3 trillion, in other words, in the crisis loans. Some of it was given to European banks. Barclays, Royal Bank of Scotland, and Deutsche Bank were among the borrowers. That came out today, the Federal Reserve being forced finally to release some of its secrets. And then I launched into a tangent, a kind of tangent that only I am able to conduct and that I am famous for. And very often the tangents are where the real beauty of the show lies. And I went to, watch out, be very careful, because once we start talking about cabals and banks, there are simple-minded people out there who want to find a scapegoat, and they're going to start saying banker equals Jew, the Jews did it to us, and there we go again. And then I warned you that the Holocaust, the death of millions of Jews and others, did not happen overnight. It started with a smear campaign against a particular race of people. The smear campaign led to the killings of millions of people. And you have to be very, very careful in your discussions of the Federal Reserve and of bankers in general. That does not mean that if an individual is caught in this mix of any race or religion that they shouldn't be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. That's not what I am saying. But I don't need to spend much time on that particular distraction. Let the guilty be punished. Let the innocent go free. But then I warned you that this crisis that we are in now, this banking crisis, has other ramifications. And that is that this new book that I'm talking about, Bloodlands, Europe Between Hitler and Stalin, by the great historian Timothy Snyder, that I was reading, is so chilling, and I read from it, that it's worth talking about. Because many of you live in the school book idea that Hitler was the mass murderer and Stalin and the Soviet communists were the liberators. You're living in a delusion. That's a schoolboy's view of history. You owe it to yourself to learn more about these mass murders. And you can do so by reading this book by Timothy Snyder. Now, the key words that I were using, the key word I was using in the last hour about Hitler and Stalin was the word transformative. Because both Hitler and Stalin were utopians. You don't understand that. You don't understand that even a madman, a murderer, can be a utopian idealist. You think that utopian and utopian idealist means good. It could also mean evil. We happen to have a utopian idealist, a do-gooder, in other words, to make it simple, in office right now. Obama strikes me as a classic do-gooder of the garden variety that I've seen all of my life in universities. He has used the key phrases, the pat phrases, the ones we've all heard. I'm transformative. I'm transformational. I want to transform America. And transform America, he has. He has nationalized health care, which is totally illegal. He has nationalized General Motors, which, as far as I'm concerned, is a criminal act unto itself. And he's only just begun. He's a young man, isn't he? And if you think that he, Pelosi, and Reid are finished, you're living in a schoolbook reality. They've just gotten started. This gang that got into power is not going anywhere. By mere dint of the fact that Nancy Pelosi, the woman who single-handedly caused the meltdown of the Democrat Party, is so forceful, so powerful, and so ruthless that she's still in the majority position within her own party, tells you that they're not going to let up on their transformative socialist communist agenda. Do you understand what I'm getting at? Now that I've laid the groundwork for what the word transformation, or is this too much for you? I don't really know sometimes how much you really want to hear. I know that if you listen to others, you want to hear Bush great, Obama bad, Bush angel, Obama devil, Bush genius by book, Rush says Bush great, Bush genius, go to store by book, you go to store by book. That's okay. Go buy a book. I really don't care. I've done very well. There's enough for all of us. That's not the point. It's not about jealousy. It's not that I don't care. I really don't care, frankly, how many books he sold or I sold. I'm not in competition with the president, for God's sakes. I'm an immigrant son from the Bronx. My grandfather wasn't a senator. My father wasn't the president. My grandfather was a humble immigrant tailor who died at 47. My father was a humble immigrant secondhand antiques dealer who died at 57. Everything I have, I built on my own, so I figure I'm way ahead of the curve. So don't think I'm comparing myself to a person born with a silver spoon in his mouth who couldn't finish a sentence without embarrassing me and everybody else in the country. That's not what I'm doing here. I'm telling you that you're being duped again by the very same forces that duped you to begin with. The golfer, the wall banger, they're water carriers for the mainstream Republican Party, the very same people who wrecked this country to begin with. That's all they ever were. How do you think a talentless hack like that could get so far? How do you think he got so far so fast? But that's another book that somebody should write. That's not my goal here to even talk about. It doesn't matter to me. Good luck to him. What I want to talk about is the danger we are in with the transformative utopian idealist that we have in office named Obama. because we don't know where this could end. So let's start with the Soviet Union in the 1933 famine, where 3.3 million people in the Ukraine, you see Ukraine, you hear Ukrainian, you make jokes about the women, oh, how beautiful. And do you have any idea where the Ukraine is, most of you? Do you know what the Ukraine was? Do you have any idea why the Ukrainians died? Well, it began with the collectivization of the farms in the Ukraine. It was the wheatland of Russia. And this incredibly moronic Stalin said that they were not producing enough grain for the Soviet Union. And he then blamed the middle class that owned the farms. He called them, they were known as the kulaks. They were farmers. In other words, they owned their own farms. They raised the crop. They sold some of the crop. And he blamed them for being greedy capitalists, which you hear now all the time from the radical scum left. You hear the word capitalist, greedy capitalist. It's coming out of the universities. It's coming out of Bolivia. It's coming out of Iran. It's coming out of Venezuela. It's coming out of Harvard. It's, as far as I'm concerned, it's the very same bourgeoisie that is being targeted by Obama all over again. So let's go back to the Ukraine, 1933. Stalin grabs the farms from the farmers. He calls them names, bourgeoisie, greedy, capitalists. He says the kulaks did it. He starts to execute them, and he puts government bureaucrats in charge of farming. In other words, it's what Obama has done with health care. Stalin did with farming. What happened is the crops failed. The government morons couldn't raise crops any more than the morons who Obama is putting in charge of General Motors or in charge of the healthcare system will be able to deliver a better car or a better loaf of bread at a lower price. So what happened was a famine results in Russia, particularly in the Ukraine. The crops fail. There's a great famine in 1933, and 3.3 million Ukrainians die from starvation from the famine and are killed, by the way, at the same time. And then there's 250,000 or so Poles, who were then Soviet citizens, Polish people, who were killed, executed simply because of their ethnicity during the purges of 1937, sometimes 1937-38. At that time, the NKVD, the predecessor of the KGB, simply picked Polish-sounding names from the telephone directory or arrested all those attending a Polish church service and killed them. Let me focus again on the Polish church service. The same thing is going on in the world right now. Christians are being decimated in the Muslim world. Christians are being rounded up and killed even in Iraq, a country that George Bush liberated. A country liberated what? For the greater dissemination of hatred against Christians? Don't ask Rush Limbaugh to describe that. He wouldn't be capable even answering the question. Certainly don't ask the wall banger to understand what went on. He wouldn't even be able to understand the question. Ask me the question, I'll give you the answer. So you say, well, now you're really getting off the track. What does it have to do with Obama? Where are you going with this? Again, I'm trying to reiterate what I said to you. My entire book, Trickle Up Poverty, is not about how evil Obama is, because I don't believe he's evil. I believe Obama's a naive, utopian idealist. They are the most dangerous people that any nation has to live through. You can give me the crooks. This country can survive its crooks. You can give me the charlatans. This country has survived Bill Clinton. You can give me any amount of shenanigans performed by any politician. We can survive it because of the great system that was created by the founding fathers. What we have never yet experienced in this country is a man of the nature of Barack Hussein Obama. The country has never seen anything like this guy. Now, you may say, well, he just took a shellacking. He lost 60, 70 seats. He certainly has been chagrined, and he's learned his lesson. You are wrong. He has learned nothing. He is right now trying to push a START treaty with Russia that would decimate our national security. I have been like Paul Revere for 3 months now, begging you to buy Trickle Up Poverty, read the chapter on the military, particularly read the pages about what the START Treaty really is, and understand what this man, Obama, is about to do to us with regard to his accord with Russia and their desires. You know what Russia came out with today? You know what's in the news today? Putin has said, unless the U.S. signs the START treaty, Russia will build more nuclear weapons. Okay? Now, I want you to absorb that so that you finally understand who you have in the White House. You have a combination of Neville Chamberlain and Pol Pot mixed in with a little Lenin and Karl Marx, all in one man from Kenya. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Euro crisis spreads to Spain, Portugal, Italy as yields swell. This is a repeat of history. And as Santayana, the Spanish philosopher, once wrote, those who do not know history are condemned to repeat it. And I believe we're repeating history all over again. We have a banking crisis, in essence a Great Depression, that's being denied, put off by fancy bookkeeping. And then we have a Neville Chamberlain. This time he's in America. England doesn't even exist anymore. The charlatan who runs England is below the level of anyone we've ever seen in history. The man has no qualifications whatsoever. And so we have the United States representing the West being run by a Neville Chamberlain. We have the equivalent of, let us say, some of the more vigorous types running some of the European nations and Russia. And we have a desire to disarm the United States of America by Obama. So things are going on all over again. Just comes out today that U.S. stocks sold off early on European woes. And here we go again. Do you know that 2 out of 3 Irish are unemployed? Do you realize it's a repeat of history all over again? I mean, there was a great famine of 1848 through 1850, if I remember correctly, when the potato crop failed. It was a monocrop upon which the poor of Ireland were living. And when the potato virus hit, the food supply was wiped out, and that's when the Irish came to America to our benefit, no doubt. But the point of the story is that there's a new famine in Ireland, and the famine is that of sound government. There's a famine of sound government throughout the West, as far as I am concerned. The virus of greed, and I would say stupidity, but that's not the correct word. It's a virus of greed. Well, I'll look for the right word and I'll give it to you. I hate to use the wrong word, and I don't have the right word yet to describe the leadership of the West, which is, of course, vacant. Let's take some callers right now on the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800. I'm sorry if I got too far off the track. I know you'd rather hear about my cooking of opa fish last night with capers and onions, capers and olives. But what's the talk about? I mean, so I cooked another meal and it was excellent. And it was. And the Rotelia marinara was still better than anything because I still like pasta over anything else. However, the pasta must be cooked, not al dente, but I call it al bente. Never give me pasta that's stiff. How anyone can pull this charade on you, I'll never understand. How this originated in America is also a part of the foolishness of the American people. Who ever heard of eating stiff noodles that you can't digest? Americans who don't understand that this is not the way to eat noodles of any kind. They're supposed to be cooked to softness so you can digest them. They feel soft and fluffy in your stomach rather than some hard little objects that were in a box, you know, 8 minutes before. A box as hard as cardboard. And the reason you are eating al dente is because it's a nation filled with children who want to be fashionable. So because they wanted to cook the spaghetti faster and save on heat and boiling water, some Italian restaurant owner started to serve uncooked spaghetti. People complained, and he looked at them and said, "What are you, crazy? This is al dente. That's the way we eat it in Europe. Now shut up your mouth and eat it." And, of course, that's the beginning of a food trend in the United States of America, along with other incredible genius concepts such as drizzling things on things, putting raspberries on steak, everything, in other words, known to the deranged mind of the chefs who go to so-called cooking schools that your grandmother would have thrown out of her kitchen. That's why I don't want to talk about opa fish with capers and olives and how I cooked it. There's nothing to it, frankly. But you should know that when the fish have been examined by ichthyologists, tapeworms have been found in this particular breed of fish, as have tapeworms been found in tuna fish. Never eat sushi. Never eat sushi. Never eat sushi.
Savage.
By the way, we're still looking. We have teams searching for any reference to Michael Savage and being banned in Britain and WikiLeaks, and it's nowhere to be found. That does not mean the cables don't exist, because I know they exist, because I found the emails and published them and banned in Britain. So, again, this furthers my argument that this stooge Assange works for the radical leftist worldwide internationalist organizations that are behind the WikiLeaks, which basically smear any conservative or any nationalist in the world, because these do exist. It's just that you're not going to see them because they don't want you to see them. So, anyway, here we are. What else do you want to talk about? Did you hear about the story in San Francisco where an illegal immigrant, shall I say illegal alien, beat and blinded a 78-year-old woman with a pry bar during a burglary attempt? He had to be pulled out of Mexico, basically, by his ears. He ran to Mexico after breaking into a house in Daly City, and the widow was there. He beat her so badly he blinded her. She's in a rest home for the rest of her life. I know they all come here to work. Just ask Harry Reid, who's trying to push the Dream Act in the middle of the night. Well, they all come here to work. Never mind what you see going on around you. Pay no attention to what you see going on around you. Pay only attention to what Harry Reid and Hillary Clinton and the other leftists want you to believe. Anyway, it's all on michaelsavage.com. Florida, David, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, as I was listening to the first hour of your program, I was thinking that it's only been listening to you for 9 months and then you coming out with trickle-up poverty that I could have even, you know, had the denial I've been living in broken sufficiently to where I could even hear that and grasp it and fully understand that, and especially the idea that this man who is our president is truly a utopian. And he's dangerous because he's bought so completely into the utopian.
Exactly. He's a utopian idealist, better known in some circles as a Fabian socialist. It doesn't really matter how you define him. He believes very strongly in the transformational aspect of his particular life. And these are the most dangerous leaders the world can ever see, are the transformational idealists. Because unless they are stopped politically, they are capable of virtually anything. And although they themselves may be kindly, wonderful people, behind them, there may be people who are the opposite.
Yeah, I was thinking that until I read your background information on him and the way that you put it together, it had never occurred to me that this guy had so bought into that ideal that he really was capable. He and the people around him truly were capable of the kind of things. And, I mean, it's so funny. It would have been absurd to me before, but capable of taking us in a direction that led to the very thing you were reading from the Bloodlands book. And as you were reading it,
that's what I was trying to get at. In other words, Obama certainly wouldn't want that to happen. But take a look at Bill Ayers, the domestic terrorist, the unrepentant domestic terrorist, Bill Ayers. He was one of the founders of the Weather Underground. But he is not alone. If he was the only one, we wouldn't even be talking about him. The Marxist, Leninist, czars, and czarinas that Obama has appointed are still there. Remember, we had an election. They weren't touched by any of this election. No FBI background check. No congressional hearing. No public input. Obama handpicks and placed into power men and women who share his Marxist, Leninist convictions. Some of them admire, quote, and are inspired by Mao Zedong, the butcher of humanity with the blood of 60 to 70 million on his hands. I'm not making this up. We are being ruled by a new class of czars, the likes of which we haven't seen since the last days of the Romanov dynasty in Russia. Page 43 of Trickle Up Poverty. I mean, there's a reason people are reading and buying this book.
Before that, I would have gone on believing that these guys were basically harmless.
That's right. You would have thought that they were nice college types who don't mean any harm. They just want to do good. They want a greener earth. They want to eliminate coal-fired plants. They want the poor to have decent medical care. They want the homeless to have housing. They're not bad people. They're good people. But be careful, because the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
That they were simply people from another perspective who disagreed with what I believed, instead of really understanding the movements that led, again, to the things you were reading from Bloodlands, how long they took, and the way they developed, and then putting that into the perspective of today and realizing just because I think that, like you, that he's probably a really nice guy doesn't mean that he's incapable of leading us in a direction that is horrific.
That's correct. That is correct. These hardcore communists who he has appointed are not nice guys. There's Obama's regulatory czar, Cass Sunstein, a real piece of work and a diehard animal rights zealot. You read page 47, you learn things about him that you cannot believe. He actually is rooting for socialism. He's frustrated that, quote, in a variety of ways, subtle and less subtle. I don't want to quote this anymore. There's John Holdren, the science advisor that Obama picked, who said the rate of growth of material consumption is going to have to come down and there's going to have to be a degree of redistribution. And redistribution of wealth both within and among nations is absolutely essential if a decent life is to be provided for every human being. So that means people living in mud huts in Africa are now going to have better housing and you're going to have worse housing, according to science czar John Holdren, appointed by Barack Obama. If this is not worldwide communism, I'd like to know what is.
There were times when I was reading the first few chapters of Trickle Up Poverty, and I literally had to put the book down because I was so shocked at my, and I didn't think I was someone who lived in denial, at my own willingness to just not look at what was really happening and just go about my busy life.
Well, that's what books are for. If the book has information in it that other books don't have, then they're worth reading. If they're just filled with, a little whatever, I mean, then they're entertainment. So when I say, is Obama a Marxist-educated mole, on page 33, and then I spend the chapter explaining that I maintain that Barack Obama is a naked Marxist, and I say he's a Marxist with a Leninist complex, and I see that over 100,000 or 120,000, 130,000 people by now have bought this book, I realize that I am not alone in my analysis. You're one of 130,000 buyers, but possibly 500,000 readers of this important document called Trickle Up Poverty. Oh, it has a catchy title. It has a clever cover. I did a lot to promote it. But the fact is, it's the most important book of the last several years that has come out of the conservative movement. And I believe that as time goes on and the closer we get to the 2012 election, and the more people realize the danger we are in, because believe me, Obama's not finished with his desire to transform America. He himself has said he's only gotten started. Take a look, for example, what Harry Reid has just done. Harry Reid, who won by the hair of his nose, is now working overtime to placate La Raza, the radical brown supremacist group, and push forward a bill called the Dream Act. My God, it comes right out of the ex-Soviet Union. What do you mean, the Dream Act? It's an act of illegality, taking illegal alien children and giving them a free education. What kind of dream is that? And by the way, the cost is estimated to be $4.2 billion. That's never discussed when Harry Reid talks about it. So they've just gotten started, David. They haven't ended at all. And we don't know where this experiment with Obama ends, do we?
I have no illusions any longer that they have only just begun. And as long as they have the ability, they will continue incrementally at times and probably going right over everyone at other times, to continue to solidify the ideology that they
That's
want.
Right. They're going to pass laws with or without Congress. They're going to bypass Congress and push forward their legislation, irrespective of what the American people or what Congress itself demands. And unless we impeach him when he does any more of this and start to impeach some of these Democrats, we're going to wind up with a disaster that we can't even control, nor that we can ever come back from. We must start talking about the I word in order to stop them before it's too late. The impeachment word is a very important story for the year 2011 and beyond, okay? And I want to put that aside right now. We're moving into the post-Thanksgiving, pre-Christmas holidays. People's minds are already numb from, with where we are in the season. And yet, even as I speak with you, Obama is working around the clock in the dark of night to pass the most damaging treaty in the history of our national security, the Star Treaty. And at the same time, Harry Reid is pushing the Dream Act. They haven't stopped at all. In fact, they're escalating their demonic agenda. David, what age bracket are you in?
I'm 45 years old, and I have a master's level education. And I was just, Michael, I was just going about my life.
Of course, like all of us. But if you had heard this a year ago, you would have said we're right-wing, crazy, insane people. Correct?
I don't know that I would have gone that far, but I certainly would have just raised an eyebrow and maybe chuckled.
Okay, good. Yes, that's a convenient way to look at people who tell you inconvenient things, inconvenient truths, and whatnot. The fact of the matter is, it's easy to dismiss people like myself with an eyebrow. But don't dismiss me. Dismiss me at your own peril is what I'd like to say, because more often than not, I turn out to be right, and those who have dismissed me turn to have been thrown out of their jobs. It's happened in the radio business. It's happened in every profession I've been in. Anyone who has dismissed me usually winds up dismissed themselves. Let me send you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty to give to your grandfather in Kiev. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Dream. Dream, 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 when I want you in my arms.
In the middle of the 20th century, Nazi Germany and Stalin's Soviet Union killed 14 million non-combatants in peacetime and in war. 14 million people. Mass murders. And we were talking about that, and of course there's no direct linkage to what's going on in the world today, or is there? Well, when I say, or is there, I'm asking a loaded question, because these mass murders did not occur overnight. They started with hate, they started with lies, they started with seeking a scapegoat or scapegoats, and they ended up with 14 million innocent people being killed. And I suggest the book again. I didn't write it, Bloodland. In fact, we should interview the gentleman, Timothy Snyder, Europe between Hitler and Stalin, so that you can get rid of your cartoon notion that the Hitlerites were the mass murderers and the Soviets were the liberators, because many of you went to colleges where the Soviets were said to be the liberators and the Nazis were said to be the mass murderers. The fact is, both groups were the mass murderers. One last note from that book is that the Western Allies did nothing to stop the Holocaust, or little, and that the only government that took direct action to help the Jews was the Polish government. Seven of the first eight operations conducted in Warsaw by the underground Polish Home Army were in support of the Jewish ghetto uprising. Now, here's the part that you probably never heard that should make you throw up. After the war, the communist authorities executed as fascists Polish soldiers who had helped the Jews. You don't know that because you were brainwashed in college to believe that the Soviets were kind, loving individuals, that communists were the good guys and the Nazis were the fascists. So if you want to grow up and you want your history to grow up with you, you should understand there's a lot more to be learned by yourself and by myself. Your hero, Joseph Stalin, regarded all Soviet prisoners of war as traitors. The Germans starved them to death in the millions. Well, I don't want to go on anymore. You can get the picture. Just read Snyder's book. And we're going to interview him later in the week. Now, that's a book worth talking about as well. Let's go to the callers and the time that remains. We have 6 big minutes in the Savage Nation in this hour. Daniel in Victorville, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
I wanted to talk about the START Treaty as not being really the biggest threat to us, because it's a threat that you don't see. The enemy within is the most dangerous. And there is an ongoing disarmament effort within the United States government that's been happening for quite a long time, regardless of the treaty being signed or not. The first thing I like to say is that back in 1989, the primary facility for building the W-88 warhead, which was stolen by China, given to him by Bill Clinton, it was shut down by the EPA. So we never finished our upgrade program.
Hold on now. Did you recall the show I did not too long ago where I said that Sam Cohen, the genius who invented the neutron bomb, told me on this show when I was a local host that George Bush Sr., deactivated all of our neutron bombs? Can you confirm or deny that?
The United States has no enhanced radiation warheads, which is the other term for a neutron bomb, in our arsenal right now. I believe only the State of Israel, perhaps the Russian Federation, have them.
But it was George Bush who took them down, correct?
Yes, he would have made the decision to do that, and it was his EPA that shut down our warhead manufacturing plant at Rocky Flats.
Good God. People don't know this, do they? They have no idea. Daniel, I understand you have a history in this field. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm a professional in the field.
All right, so the START Treaty is being pushed by Obama, and what's shocking to me is that some of the Republicans, like John Kyle, are opposing it only because they want to bargain and get something in return, but they're clearly in favor of the same START Treaty, and I'm afraid they're going to pass it, aren't they?
I'm afraid so as well, because any the threat from the idea that the Russian Federation will build more numbers is enough to frighten a lot of the little country clubbers in the Republican Party into going along with it.
Well, the START Treaty is very, very dangerous on the face of it, because not only does it require that the number of nuclear weapons that we possess be deactivated, but it also requires the destruction or the deactivation of 50% of our nuclear submarines and 50% of our strategic bombers. Isn't that correct?
It would depend on, because there's overall number caps in it, such as, there's the 1550 warheads and then the, I believe, 750 nuclear delivery vehicles. So it would be up to then a bureaucratic Pentagon panel or something to decide what the mix is going to be. But it's going to come out ugly, because one of the first victims is going to be the Minuteman III ICBM, of which we currently deploy 500. It's capable of carrying three warheads right now, but there's a plan, regardless of the START Treaty, to cut that to one warhead. And it's not going to be one.
I got to read you something from Trickle Up Poverty about the START Treaty. Let me take you back to 1983, page 272. Listen to this. This is shocking. 1983, at the time, Obama was a 22-year-old college student at Columbia. Although most of his college records and papers have been sealed, hidden, or more likely destroyed, Obama penned an article for the campus newspaper, which has recently surfaced. In his article entitled Breaking the War Mentality, the young Obama sided with the anti-nuclear freeze camp and wrote of pursuing, quote, a peace that is genuine, lasting, and non-nuclear, close quote. In other words, this man is a college radical who is implementing every imagined academic leftist give peace a chance experiment. This is very real now. We now have a hippie, radical, left-wing mentality raging in the White House. It's out of control. And I don't think we can survive this Treaty of Versailles that he is engaging us in. And that's why Congress must not ratify START. It must not ratify START. And yet I see the Republicans already throwing in the towel, simply trying to bargain some financial gain for their districts and their cronies as though it's business as usual. Daniel, the same thing is going on again.
Yes, and another dangerous thing they have, there's a backdoor plan to further disarm us called, it's a big corporate welfare program called the Prompt Global Strike. And what they want to do is they want to waste all the money of an entire ICBM airframe to throw one conventional bomb with it. But according to the treaty, because it's an ICBM missile frame, it counts as one of our nuclear weapons anyway. So he wants to do that, pay these corporations, the defense contractors, tens of billions.
Oh, God. Daniel, let me ask you something. As a former nuclear scientist, have you read this chapter that I have on trickle-up poverty yet?
No, I have not, sir.
Okay, I'm going to send you a copy of the book. Read it and please get back to us. It's a very, very dismal time in American history. We have a radical in the White House surrounded by a secret cabal. I'll use the word again. Of non-confirmed czars. They've never been vetted by the FBI. They have never been looked at by the FBI. This is in the midst of WikiLeaks, which, again, you have to see in context. You have a government under Obama that stopped websites that were selling Prada handbags, that were selling designer goods. They closed down the websites, and yet they permitted WikiLeaks to release this data, this information, these encrypted emails, that have embarrassed many around the world, but most notably Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton has been neutralized as a potential candidate against Obama in 2012 to a certain extent by this WikiLeaks scandal. That's been my analysis now for two straight days. Although Hillary Clinton is to the left of center, she is a far more sober candidate for the presidency than this radical from nowhere land. Now you understand how dangerous the world is that you live in. Or do you? Do you really understand what's going on? I hope to try to help you do so on a daily basis, right here on the radio show, on my website, and in my book, Trickle Up Poverty. I thank you for listening. I'll be back in a moment to continue this discussion right here on your local affiliate.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here's what's on the website, michaelsavage.com, top right. Putin says no star treaty means more Russian nukes. In other words, we're being blackmailed. Prime Minister Putin said Russia will build up its nuclear arsenal if the United States reflects a very dumb nature and fails to ratify START. Now, I have spent an entire chapter in Trickle Up Poverty warning you. In fact, the headline in my book ad is Stop Obama from Destroying Our National Security, Read How. Why do you think Russia is so anxious to pass the START Treaty that our stooge president signed with him last May? I have a whole chapter on this. This is the most important question of all. More important than our banks melting down would be this treaty. Read about it. WikiGate. Floodgates open for critics of Obama administration. No kidding. No kidding. I wonder why. Well, you'll see why. Michael Savage to write two thrillers for St. Martin's Press. New York City sending organ donor teams to some 911 calls. Isn't that nice? Fearless genius Michael Savage on what's trickling up from Obama. Huh, that's interesting. Teddy believes that too. There's some very serious news about the economy. Domino effect. What's next in the euro crisis is what some are asking. Well, I'll tell you what's next in the euro crisis. But let's look at here. Harry Reid, who won by a hair, is rolling the dice and bringing forward the DREAM Act again. The Hispanic radical lobbyists are leaning hard on him and moderate Republicans, including the Rhino, Olympia Snow, Susan Collins, and Scott Brown. More rhinos. Told you Brown was a rhino. To pass the DREAM Act, which is a real dream because it'll rip off America to the tune of billions of dollars a year, granting amnesty to illegal alien students in our colleges. Spain arrests 7 with links to Mumbai attacks. Oh, no kidding. Oh, Islamic cells in Spain? The Spain? Really? The rain in Spain goes mainly down the drain? Or is it that Spain goes mainly down the drain? More charges for terror debt and foiled New York City subway plot. Wow. U.S. combat troops overwhelmingly are against a repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, while the brass at top, the non-fighting fat asses, the non-fighting leaders of the military are trying to force the gay issue down the throats of our troops. GOP plans to block all Senate bills pushed by the Democrats, unrelated to tax cuts and cutting back on government spending. Well, that's what they were told to do. No kidding. Federal judge upholds Obamacare mandate. Well, that's interesting. We do want to repeal Obamacare. Democrats abandons Obama on gate rape. Gate rape? What's gate rape? Oh, gate rape. Oh, you mean the TSA? I get it. Gate rape, they're calling it now. That's very interesting. Or is it gate rape? TSA gate. Let's see. Hollywood publicist was gunned down by an expert marksman, according to the London Daily Mail. An initial coroner's report showed the movie industry's publicist's injuries, she was shot dead 2 weeks ago, were consistent with a professional execution. A jerk who runs WikiLeaks said that Hillary Clinton should step down. Well, this proves that I, Michael Savage, was right all along, that this entire attack was permitted by the Obama administration in order to destroy Hillary Clinton politically. What else do you fear the Obama administration is going to use this crisis of WikiGate for? Is Obama's sluggish reaction to WikiGate proof that he approves of it and it's involved? Putin has said no START treaty means more Russian nukes, obviously a tough power ploy. Do you fear that Obama is going to play into Putin's hands? He's a puppet in his hands. there are other questions that are very important. And one of them is that the United States is going to bail out Europe, in plain English. You didn't know that? Yeah. The euro crisis is spreading to Spain, Portugal, and Italy as yields swell. Yield spreads for Portugal, Spain, and Italy, and even Belgium widen, and mounting fears of defaults or even a breakup of the single currency area. The euro has fallen to a 10-week low. The dollar has risen. And you may say this is good for us, and in the long run it will be, but the vermin who run the economy want a weak dollar and a broken America. You don't understand any of this yet. That's why I wrote the book, Trickle Up Poverty. Maybe if you understood it, we wouldn't be destroyed as a nation. U.S. is about to bail out European banks. They said that they're going to put billions into a EU stability fund. What does that mean? Well, we're the biggest contributor to the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, and now they want to turn to us. We should bail out Europe when we're broke here? This is unbelievable to me. The IMF, whose biggest single shareholder is the United States, has now committed 250 billion euros to this fund. This is amazing to me. How in the world can the United States steal our money and do this? U.S. Treasury's prices fell and the euro strengthened against the dollar on Wednesday after the news that the U.S. would be prepared to support an enlarged fund. While Germany, whose leaders have expressed frustration at the market backlash against their plans to solve the eurozone's debt problems, does not want to make the stability fund larger. In other words, they don't want to further bail out the bums. Most of this money is going to the banks, by the way, not to the people. I don't know if you know this. This is a bailout of banks to banks with your money. A big blockbuster story that's talked about today on the Savage Nation is this. The Federal Reserve today, just today, was forced to release details on who they lent the $3.3 trillion to during the 07 to 09 financial meltdown under George Bush, including who borrowed how much and what, if any, collateral they put up. These findings were published today, and the newly released documents show the companies included. Here's the companies who got your money during the bailout under George Bush, the new saint. Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, and Wells Fargo. But wait, foreign banks were also lent money during the crisis. Barclays, Royal Bank of Scotland, and Deutsche Bank were among the borrowers. This is astonishing, unprecedented, never happened before. And look what's happening under Bush and Obama. You don't understand any of this. I understand that. You'd rather me talk about stuffed peppers. And that's why we're talking about stuffed peppers. And today my recipe is what I cooked last night, which is not stuffed peppers, but a piece of OPA fish with capers and olives. All of this and more right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
We've talked about how the pay and benefits average for federal jobs are much higher than what is being paid in the private sector. That's right. The government workers get much more than you do. The Obama administration has recently announced a two-year pay freeze for federal workers. Well, this leaves us to wonder, is this a good start or just window dressing? Joining us now from the Cato Institute and downsizinggovernment.org is Chris Edwards. Chris, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks a lot for having me on tonight.
Do you agree with the chapter I wrote in Trickle Up Poverty on cutting back on all government spending?
Well, a federal pay freeze has been a long time coming. Federal pay has soared over the recent decade compared to private sector pay. Just since 2000, average federal pay has gone up 62%, which is twice the 30% increase in the private sector. So the federal government has become this sort of elite institution of high-paid workers who are completely isolated from the realities of the private sector economy. So I think a federal wage freeze is the first start in overhauling federal compensation.
And why now?
Well, at Cato, we've been complaining about overpaid federal workers for a number of years. And, in fact, I called for a wage freeze back in 2006 in a Washington Post op-ed. But I think this is really coming to a head now because of the recession. Private sector workers in America haven't been getting the big wage increases that federal and state and local government workers have. They continue to get increases. They've got extremely generous benefits. So I think, frankly, the public was just getting really frustrated in seeing this isolated island of highly compensated workers in Washington.
But what effect will we see from this?
Well, the federal government is a very insular sort of bureaucracy. There's 2 million federal civilian workers. They have a very low turnover rate in the federal government. Essentially, young people join. The benefits and the pay is so good, they sort of get golden handcuffs on. And the result is you get this kind of inbred federal bureaucracy. There isn't enough turnover. So I think an advantage of cutting federal pay and benefits would be that some of these long-time workers who've been there too long leave, and then we get some young, fresh blood in the federal government with new ideas. So, you know, I see it as an advantage to cut federal pay and get more turnover.
Well, what kind of reaction has there been? Are the government workers going to go along with this, or are they going to sue?
Well, for years, the federal worker unions were an extremely effective special interest lobby group. They got members of Congress from both parties in the states like Maryland, Virginia, New Mexico, and a few others who have a lot of federal workers. They were kind of a narrow special interest lobby that kept pushing for higher and higher federal pay and benefits. So this is hopefully a first blow against the federal unions to try to get some rationality in federal pay. Again, private sector pay hasn't been going up in recent years, and so there's no reason we should be increasing pay for federal workers.
Where do you think it goes from here?
Well, the Republicans in Congress should embrace President Obama's pay freeze proposal and then push even harder. The Obama proposal only looks at federal wages, but federal benefits are also a big problem. I mean, to give you one example, federal workers get a 401k-style plan, like many Americans in the private sector get, but in addition, they get a old-fashioned defined benefit pension plan that's guaranteed and inflation-protected on top of their 401k plan. That's completely unfair. The federal workers get two different pension plans. So Republicans ought to push for reforms like repealing these excessive pension benefits.
Well, what are the chances of that happening?
Well, we will get budget reforms in Washington. I know a lot of your listeners might think that they're skeptical of Congress and Congress never cuts spending. The reality of trillion-dollar deficits year after year, though, is that Congress is going to have to cut the budget somewhere. And I think, you know, cutting federal worker pay and benefits is a good start, but there's all kinds of other spending cuts we need to do in the budget, which we have listed at Cato's website, downsizinggovernment.org.
What do you think needs to be done next?
Well, you know, so far the politicians have talked about, you know, cutting earmarks and some of the very small-time kind of waste in the federal government. The reality is we have to close down whole federal agencies and privatize other federal agencies. I mean, to give you one example, the U.S. Postal Service, you know, we've never really been pleased with its, you know, service. It's losing lots of money. Many European countries now have actually privatized their postal services. So there's no reason why we can't do that in America. So we ought to, you know, be thinking like a business here. We ought to be cost-cutting and privatizing and getting rid of these agencies we don't really need anymore.
The subject of the Bush tax cuts is currently being discussed. What do you think is going to happen and what's happening now?
Well, unless the Republicans are completely politically incompetent, I think all of the Bush tax cuts will be extended for at least 2 years. The Republicans are in a very strong bargaining position here. Even if they don't come to an agreement by the end of the year during the so-called lame duck session, the Republicans are going to have much more power next year in Congress. And I think that if they hold firm and no one breaks ranks, we'll get a full extension of all these tax cuts. I mean, they know, and the reality is that the problem in Washington is overspending. We're spending far above our historical norm levels. Washington is not short of revenue.
Well, what are they doing about this?
Well, with spending cuts and reducing the deficit, of course, the Democrats want to raise revenue. And most dangerously, you know, a lot of Democrats are talking about imposing a European-style value-added tax in the United States, which would be a total disaster. So Republicans have to hold firm against any sort of tax increase. You know, when the economy recovers, federal government tax revenues are going to rise to their normal level. The problem is on the spending side. Spending has floated far upwards under Bush and then Obama. We need to start cutting spending. And, you know, I believe we will cut spending. Ultimately, Americans are not going to take the higher taxes that the Democrats are trying to push to turn us into a European welfare state. So if Republicans hold firm, I do think we're going to get spending cuts. It may not be during the next 2 years, but we will get substantial spending cuts in the years ahead.
Do you really think the Democrats learned their lesson from the midterm elections? I don't think so.
I don't think the hardcore liberals in the Democrat Party, like Nancy Pelosi, got the message at all from the election. But you know what? In the long run, they've got to be sidelined as those hardcore left-wing Democrats. I think that there is enough political power in conservative Republicans and even moderate Republicans and Democrats to make the reforms we need in the years ahead. We're going to have massive budget fights in the years ahead, the likes of which Americans have never seen, because we got trillion-dollar deficits year after year. We are heading to a Greek-style debt crisis if we don't fix the problem. But, you know, ultimately, we've been in corners before, and we've always come out with a solution. I think we will get the budget cuts we need down the road.
Thanks for the report, Chris.
Thanks a lot for having me.
The Obama administration is continuing down this path of reckless spending, even though it is absolutely rejected by the American people. The midterm elections were a strong message that they continue to ignore, as is the best-selling book, Trickle Up Poverty, which spells it all out. That's it for the Savage Nation.
Savage.
The Irish are facing a familiar choice, stay or go. Did you know that 2 out of 3 of them are unemployed? One of them said, I just can't handle waking up every day to be told I live in a rubbish country. I'm going to struggle to survive and will never make any money. They're fleeing Ireland. It's frightening. It's frightening. Well, we'll talk about that. When barbarians lose fear of cops, 5 officers from the Chicago Police Department have been shot to death in the last 6 months by gangbangers. And he wondered why the ACLU should be arrested for sedition. I mean, all these stories are can be read in detail on michaelsavage.com. The site's amazing. Public outcry leads man to return fallen Marines' belongings. Oh, God. How about more proof that Vikings were first to America? You didn't know that, huh? And you thought it was the Indians or the Africans. Mexican drug gang murders female police chief. Naked truth. Too many bodies at nudist camp in South Florida. Too many people seem to want to go to a nudist camp. I guess that works with a impoverished economy. When you have no clothing, that's the place to live in the sun. You just move to a nudist camp and that solves all problems. Nudist camp has too many home sites in violation of county code. Needless to say, they're all trailers. Laura Wilst, who moved from Texas, she looks pretty beautiful, by the way. She loves the nudist camp. She says, I feel so safe here. I can ride my bicycle at 2 in the morning and I don't have to worry. Well, go look at it on michaelsavage.com. That'll get you. That'll get you to look at it. Oh, boy, from the serious to the profane, all on michaelsavage.com. Look, I know you worry about what's going on in Afghanistan and what's going on in the White House, but with all of that, you shouldn't have to worry about your computer on top of everything else. So go visit my advertisers at carbonite.com. They'll back up all your important files so they're safe no matter what happens. Use my offer code SAVAGE, and you're going to get 2 months free with your subscription. That's carbonite.com, offer code SAVAGE. The Savage Nation. I want to talk about the bed bug infestation in New York City. that is reaching virtually every avenue of society, from the poor to the rich. And whether you think this is a harbinger of the demise of our civilization, of our society, I mean, this is a previously eradicated pest problem. These bugs were beaten back for decades. But what happened is the Ivy League ruling class outlawed the organophosphates and the carbamate insecticides, and the replacement green products are not as effective as their predecessors. And as a result, if you look at when the bedbug epidemic started, you'll find that it was Al Gore and the EPA who frankly gave us the opportunity, or the opportunity for the bugs to proliferate now in New York City. It's a tyranny of the foolish. It's a tyranny of the idiots. And as C.S. Lewis wrote, of all tyrannies, a tyranny exercised for the good of its victims may be the most oppressive. It may be better to live under robber barons than under omnipotent moral busybodies. The robber baron's cruelty may sometimes sleep. His cupidity may at some point be satiated. But those who torment us for our own good will torment us without end, for they do so with the approval of their own conscience. And that's what we have now with these Ivy League morons who are ruining everything around them. I entered talk radio in 94 with the show called Immigrants and Epidemics. What's important for me to tell you is this. Many of the third world, of the issues of the third world that were gone in America, that had disappeared, are now presently emerging in the United States of America. The rampant, for example, the beheadings of police in Mexico. Do you think that's not going to come across the border with Janet Napolitano unwilling to crack down on this invasion? I think we're going to have the very same thing happening here, the same way the bedbugs have invaded America. Unless the borders are totally secured right now, we're going to have the same kind of corruption and the beheading of our own police. God forbid, but I'm telling you, it's coming across the border. Because unless we put the U.S. military there with tanks, we're going to have it in this country. Instead, we have Obama opening up our border even further than Bush opened the border. And so we go back to the simple issue of the bedbug problem. How is it that for decades there were no bedbugs to speak of in New York City or anywhere else in America? And where did this epidemic suddenly come from? Is it a result of massive, massive waves of immigration from the third world? Shall I say that to you again? Do you think there are no consequences to bringing in individuals who are not screened for health problems? Your grandfather, great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather had to go through Ellis Island, perhaps. If they were sick, they were turned away or they were put in quarantine until they got better. We don't even screen people. They can come in with the most fulminating tuberculosis and land in your hometown and go to your hospital and infect your doctor and nurse. And the government would arrest you if you dared say a word. That's a government upside down. That's why the people are up in arms. These nincompoop idiots who went to Ivy League schools don't know the first thing about anything. And consequently, the country has had enough. The country is screaming, stop now, we're going to throw you out. Now, I know bedbugs were mentioned in ancient Greece. I know they go back a long time. And I know that prior to the mid-20th century, bedbugs were very common. I'm aware of all of that. But the bedbugs were wiped out until the organophosphates, that is DDT and such, were banned as a result of Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring. And so here we now face bedbugs in the highest places in New York City. And there's no chance of stopping them without using chemicals again, chemicals that were once banned. And I tell you this, you wait until the diseases start coming up in this country as they come across the border. You wait until you see the diseases that were once annihilated in this country or eliminated reappearing again. Diseases such as leprosy, tuberculosis, cholera. I know what I'm talking about. I'm not a TV host. I'm a trained epidemiologist. And I'm telling you, it's only a matter of time until you see this happening again. This emerging third world picture of the United States of America is a direct result of the open borders. And as I say, I've been after this issue since 94. I own this issue. Bush was no better. Bush opened up the highways to Mexico. Don't you remember the big fight over those superhighways with no inspections? What was that all about? Why do both parties want an open border with Mexico? I'll let you figure it out. I'll let you figure it out. So if you think a big R and a little R next to the name is going to save you, you're wrong. To me, the borders are key. You say the economy is number one, and I agree with you, but the borders and the immigration problem are directly tied to the economy. And Obama's war on our border, which is an interesting use of phrase, it's all about the vote, it's all about the cheap labor. We all know that, we heard that. But let's look at the immigration problem from the point of view of health. What is the real cost of the illegal alien? Well, we know it's the vote, stupid. Governor Jan Brewer of Arizona said, President Obama, broken borders are not a laughing matter. No one in Arizona is laughing. Do your job and secure the border. And what did Obama say? He went to Mexico and he gave an astonishing speech. He said, in the 21st century, we are defined not by our borders, but by our bonds. Effectively, he erased the borders with Mexico with one sentence. Did you hear that? He erased the borders with Mexico with one sentence. Entering the United States illegally has been a crime since 1929. And federal law affirms that it is a crime to be in this country illegally. Did you know that? Now, let's put aside the fact that Napolitano was completely incompetent and should be fired. Because in this case, she is just reflecting the agenda of her boss, President Obama, who wishes to erase the border with Mexico. That is not hyperbole. That's what Obama said to Mexican President Calderon during a MexiFest in the White House. And he said that. In the 21st century, we're defined not by our borders, but by our bonds. Well, I don't agree with him. I believe that he is erasing our national identity. I believe that when you see members of La Raza and Micha, the subversive base of a Chicano leftist takeover, are deeply embedded in this administration, you should be very worried indeed. When you see that criminal aliens, who account for more than 29% of all prisoners in Federal Bureau of Prison Facilities, are draining us dry, and that the percentage of all federal prison inmates is even higher, you don't understand this. Investors Business Daily reported in 2005 that about half the prisoners in that state of California were illegals, 50%, adding to the financial burden the average American is supposed to pay. That's the single biggest problem in California, and the phony Whitman didn't even bring it up. She's not going to do much different than Schwarzenegger has done. So look into this issue of the real cost of legalizing illegals. Sure, it's the vote, stupid. Look at La Raza and racism inside the Obama administration. Do you know what La Raza is? As the name suggests, La Raza is an overly racist organization, in this man's opinion. Its ultimate goal is to see one race of people, Hispanics or Chicanos, conquer another race, Caucasians, by rapidly taking over the latter's social territory. I'll be right back.
Savage.
And now to the audio on the Savage Nation. First up being the creep and tool of the Obama people being used against Hillary Clinton, calling for Hillary Clinton's resignation. This is the stooge who runs WikiLeaks.
I don't think it would make much difference either way. But she should resign if it can be shown that she was responsible for ordering U.S. Diplomatic figures to engage in espionage activities at the United Nations in violation of the international covenants to which the U.S. has signed up. Yes, she should resign.
And after the so-called bipartisan meeting between Obama and Republicans, everyone has been stumbling into a microphone and talking about how frank and serious they're being. Isn't that right, Mr. Boehner?
The president has all to the White House. We had a very frank conversation. And it was interesting that both Democrats and Republicans and the president understood what the American people had to say on Election Day, I think, pretty clearly. Because the president and Democrat leaders acknowledge that the American people want us to create jobs and to cut spending.
Please stop this, would you please? Just go to Mitch McConnell's comments. You see how frank they all are? Just ready for talk radio.
And I thought it was a useful and frank discussion. We did have an opportunity to reiterate that it is the view of 100% of Senate Republicans and a number of Senate Democrats as well that the tax rates should not be bifurcated. In other words, that we ought to treat all taxpayers the same.
This is the Savage Nation. I got to tell you this as a side note. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. Florida, California, Chicago, Boston, Massachusetts, Detroit, wherever the Savage Nation is heard, on all the 300 and some odd affiliates, the millions of listeners, you're all available to call the show right now, 1-800-449-8255. Let us go to Wisconsin. Barbara, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
I want to discuss this divide and conquer approach that Obama has. You know, he came in with the unity. We're not purple states. We're not red states. We're not blue states. We're purple states. We're the United States. Hogwash. He has taken every segment of our population from race to religion to age, you name it, and divided all of us.
Absolutely. He's the most divisive president in American history. He's the great divider. And Michael Savage said it first. The most divisive president in American history, says Savage. The most divisive president in American history, says Savage. The great divider, says Savage. The country is more divided today than it has been since the Civil War. You agree or disagree with what I just said?
Absolutely do. And I will tell you something, Michael. I am a homosexual business owner, and I have had it. You know what? I'm a Republican. I don't care who I sleep with. That's my business. That has nothing.
Well, have you ever heard me recently say one word about anyone else's desires? Have you? No. You know I haven't.
No. And I don't care about anyone else.
That's because you're probably having a better time than I am. So I decided to say maybe there's something in it. You know, what's going on here?
I'm a business owner, and I see my, you know, they drive wedges between our employees and us.
But I guarantee you're having a better time than I am. I mean, I can hear that in your voice. It sounds like you got something to do tonight.
In bed, but not at work.
Oh, I was trying to draw that out of you. At least you got a sense of humor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Forgot the point.
Oh. Are there more women in the lesbian community like yourself than people know? More lesbian women who are homosexual, who are conservative?
I think there are, but you know, I have to tell you, when I came and I said I'm voting Republican, I will tell you, my college professors that I was good friends with, they won't talk to me. My friends in the gay community won't have anything to do with me.
So if I send you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty, can I put it in the plain brown crinoline?
You can put Trickle Up. I'm proud. I am proud.
Well, if you're proud to be out, then you should be proud to keep the book out. Keep it on your dashboard. The next time you go out, keep it out. How's that? Is that a good phrase for that community? The next time you go out, keep it out?
That's right. And I
you know what? You and I can be friends, I can guarantee you. You got a quick wit. Stay in the line. Free copy of Tup coming. You know, I got to tell you something. You don't know much about sushi. I don't eat it. I do eat it, but it should not be raw. Don't eat raw fish ever again. I had this experience in Florida. I go to a seafood place. I order the tuna. And she says to me, I said, make sure it's cooked all the way through. She says, oh, the chef likes to cook a tank in the middle. I said, who's paying for it, me or the chef? Well, the chef likes to cook it then the way it should be. She said, and she tries to lecture me, Miss O.H.'s. I said, honey, I live in San Francisco. I get the best seafood in the world. I don't eat raw fish. I said, I don't like worms of any kind. I don't like protozoans, acanthocephalans. I don't like nematodes or cestodes or copepods or isopods. Tell the cook to cook it my way or go to the highway. The fish comes out tasting like a Brooklyn Dodgers catcher's mitt. They spited me, in other words. They overcooked it to prove to me I didn't know what I was talking about in terms of fish. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to eat fish like this, whether it's wahoo, tuna, or even dolphin, which is disguised as something else, or mahi, or ono, or ahi and yuppie, whatever you want to call it. I'm telling you, never eat raw fish, and never eat fish pink, no matter what Mr. San Francisco chef says to you, because fish are notoriously sick with what I just mentioned to you, protozoans, acanthocephalons, nematodes, cestodes, copepods, and isopods. I wouldn't eat it. Don't eat raw fish, period. I don't know. The Purple Gang won't have me on. I don't need them. They need me. I am repeating this for a reason. Yes, there's a degree of competitiveness in me. I will admit it. But for me to have driven the book to the top of the charts without them indicates that talk radio is still dominant in terms of the world of political ideas in this country. I did it on this show. It was done nowhere else. We kept hearing talk radio is this, talk radio is that. It's only for old people. Talk radio is dead. Cable news is king. Internet is king. I don't say they don't have a powerful influence. You got to be a fool not to say so. At this stage, though, you'd have to admit, no matter how much of a Doubting Thomas you are, that Michael Savage has rescued talk radio from the gallows. If anyone out there has been doubting whether talk radio still is powerful, let me tell you something. It is more powerful today than it ever has been in my 16-year career. Much more powerful today. More listeners than ever. More influence than ever. That's if you're in a ring. If you're in the inner ring, you have an audience that needs you and listens to you. And if you make sense, well, you're gonna make a lot of friends. And a lot of unhappy people, too. I wouldn't use the word enemies because we don't yet live in North Korea.
Savage.